From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. Suicide is the second leading cause of death among Americans aged 15 to 29. That's according to the World Health Organization. In Georgia, suicide rates increased by 16% between 1996 and 2016. After a string of suicides were live streamed on Facebook in 2017, the social media giant announced it would use artificial intelligence to scan posts for indications of self-harm and notify local authorities to intervene. Natasha Singer covers technology for the New York Times. She reported on some successes and concerns about the process a year in and joins us on the line from California. Hello, Natasha. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Larry Harris Jr. is an Atlanta musician and an activist, and he's also a suicide survivor who posted his attempt online. Larry, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Natasha, I'm going to start with your reporting. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg announced in 2017 they were hiring 3,000 more people to monitor for crimes and suicide and other self-harm. This was after some killings had been shown live. How does the process work?
Well, there's two ways that Facebook gets information to act on potential suicidal thoughts or attempts. And one is when somebody posts something on Facebook, you know, there's a little arrow you can click and you can report posts for certain things, mm-hmm. right? You can report hate speech and you can report if you're concerned about a friend's post and think they may be suicidal. So that goes directly to Facebook's human review team. And the second way is that Facebook has developed this computer algorithm that scans the posts of users in the United States, both their posts and their videos and their comments, and it scores every single one between 0 and 1. It looks at all the words, and it makes a determination about whether the system thinks that you are at immediate risk of suicide. And if you get a really high score, like 0.95, that post is automatically elevated again to Facebook's human review team, and then they look at it and they decide, you know, should we send this person resources online, like a phone number for our hotline, or is it so risky, should we call the police? Mm-hmm. And they've been calling the police, not just around the United States, but in India and Malaysia and various other countries. And the police then go to the scene where the person is, and if they're in the middle of trying to commit suicide, they try to stop it. In some cases, Facebook has made calls that are too late, and it's been too late to save people. Mm-hmm. And then there are other situations, you know, which may arise in which the police show up. And in one case that I found in Ohio, the woman whose house the police arrived to said, yeah, but I don't feel suicidal right now. Mm. And the police said, yeah, but, you know, you made the suicidal post, which Facebook sent us, and you have to go to the hospital and have a psychiatric exam. So you can either come voluntarily or we're going to take you into police custody and take you for a psych exam. And so clearly Facebook has to do something and we want them to, but we don't know if the system is effective, yeah. And we don't know if it's safe, and we don't know if some people who are in fact not suicidal are being forced to have psych exams and may be committed.
So this is obviously, it's some assets, some liabilities, and you reported on how it works in a couple of cases, including one in Rock Hill, South Carolina, where the police were informed unable to locate somebody, but Facebook, with its absolute precision analytics, was able to do it. So there is, they have a lot of information here, and Facebook reported that they'd be alerting first responders in 3,500 cases. So that's pretty significant and a pretty good headline for a company after a string of bad headlines. Most recently, these revelations had been passing on a lot more user data than disclosed. So what are the privacy protocols for posts that send up red flags about possible suicide attempts?
So one of the issues is your posts are being scored. And what happens to that when your posts are scored as suicidal? And Facebook says that after 30 days, if your posts are not flagged for possible suicide risk, those scores disappear. And Facebook says they are not using that information, for example, to allow drug companies to market antidepressants to users. But the further question is, you know, once Facebook has called the police, sometimes they've shared people's posts. Sometimes they've shared people's videos. What happens if there's illegal substances or guns or something in that content, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so there's no warrant involved. So, you know, again, if somebody's in the middle of making a suicide attempt, there's no question that A, society would like Facebook to try to stop that, and B, they have a duty to warn, right? So we're not talking about the extreme cases. We're talking about what are these things in the middle that are middle ground that we don't know how Facebook is making decisions, so we don't know what the potential risks are. And Facebook told me that they're not tracking the outcomes. They don't know what happens after they make a phone call. So they have called the police 3,500 times over the last year in the United States. But how many of those people, you know, had cops show up at their house that didn't need to show up and that caused a chain of reactions and left some people with police reports for the rest of their lives, right? And so the problem here is not Facebook's good intentions. It's the lack of transparency. They're behaving like a doctor, right? They're behaving like a public medical institution, screening people for suicide, calling the cops, which end up sending people for psychiatric exams. But, you know, they're not behaving with the transparency of a public health institution that would tell us how the process works and what the outcomes are.
Yeah, basically saying maybe we failed on all of these other privacy concerns, but you can trust us with this one.
And, you know, we don't know if we can or we can't. We would certainly love this to work, because if their system works, then they could share it publicly, and all the other groups who are involved in suicide prevention might be able to learn something. Or if there's some kind of tensions or bumpy areas, other groups who've been working at this longer could share it with Facebook. And so the problem is Facebook is a private company, right, with private policies and practices, but they're taking on a public health role while acting like a private company with secrets.
Well, Larry, you have struggled with suicidal feelings and attempts, and you posted about attempting suicide online. Do you feel comfortable telling us about that experience?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, just a little background. I was in Boston up until 2007 in school, and I started a nonprofit there. Never had any symptoms that I knew about, but was diagnosed bipolar in 2007 as I was leaving Boston to move to Miami to start a record label. So I was dealing with the diagnosis and doing a lot of research about my diagnosis. Spent a lot of time in Miami making music. On this point, I can relate to Kanye West. As I was making music, didn't want to take my medication because I felt it would inhibit my process. So ended up not taking meds for a long time in Miami, was making some great music, felt great about it, had great feelings because I was manic. So that manic is a very seductive frame of mind. It feels good. You have a lot of energy, but it's not ultimately safe. So at one point in 2012, I attempted suicide in Miami. Fortunately, was not successful and was hospitalized. And I ended up writing about it for the Huffington Post and posting on Facebook about it and all that kind of stuff, because I wanted to be an advocate for people that were in the same position, that had feelings that were either dark or manic, and didn't know what to do about it.
So there was no intervention for you, Facebook aided, but you did post about it publicly.
I did.
So why do you think so many people do turn to social media to announce their suicide attempts?
Well, I think people feel more emboldened behind a keyboard than they do talking to someone to their face. And sometimes people don't have people in their lives that they feel comfortable telling these things about their feelings and emotions. I know as a man and as a Black man, you know, men feel that sharing, a lot of times in male friendships, we're devoid of, you know, real conversations and feelings. And Black men especially have a hyper-masculine view of ourselves and each other. So don't talk about these things and don't seek treatment and often self-medicate. So, you know, I think in a lot of cases, people feel more comfortable sharing online because it's not necessarily going to have a repercussion, even though maybe it does now with Facebook's intervention strategies.
That's Larry Harris Jr. He's a suicide survivor and a musician and producer. And also with us is Natasha Singer, who's reported and followed Facebook's AI for suicide risks and interventions. I'd love you to pick up on that, Natasha. This is not something you necessarily reported on, but there was a lot of talk in the last couple of years, and in fact, some accusations that Facebook was implicated in the increase in self-harm, you know, providing a platform or normalizing, not just for men, as Larry was talking about, but especially for young women. Any real data behind that?
I don't think we have data that quantifies the trend, but certainly last year, a number of people around the world did live stream suicides and suicide attempts on Facebook Live. And one of the questions that the psychiatrist I interviewed asked was, you know, what role are social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram playing on increased suicide rates, depression, you know, young girls feeling bad about how they look and eating disorders? You know, how do these platforms unintentionally foster our feeling of being lonely, even though we can broadcast to many, many people? And when we talk only about Facebook's good intentions in trying to solve this problem, we leave out the important question you've just asked, which is, what is the role of these companies actually in making the problems worse? Mm-hmm. And should they change how the platforms work in some way to try to minimize the emotional toll on people?
So Facebook has this precision risk scoring technology, and it's offering some aid to a mental health system that is really strained here in the U.S. You talked a little bit about the privacy implications, but how about the idea of a social media company actually monitoring mental health?
Right. So you asked a really important question because you described it as like this precision algorithm. But we don't actually know, right? Because it's a black box.
Right. I assume that it is because Facebook knows so much about all of us already.
Right. But actually, when I spoke to them and asked them, how did you develop this algorithm? Did you develop it based on the language of users you know to have either tried to commit suicide or did commit suicide? They said they had based the algorithm on the reports that users filed to Facebook about their friends that they were concerned about and that their teams acted on. So the algorithm is designed to predict which posts that users file to Facebook their folks will act on, right? Mm-hmm. It's not actually developed on people who were suicidal that we know to have been suicidal. So, like, we actually don't know. Clearly, Facebook has huge computing power and the most sophisticated software engineers. So, you know, we would think that this would be very, very effective, but they haven't produced any effectiveness data because they're not following how effective it is. And what's really interesting is that other companies have tried to do similar things, like Microsoft a few years ago tried to see if looking at the language on Twitter, they could predict depression. And they actually got people to volunteer, right? Because on Facebook, you're being scanned for suicidality, whether you like it or not. But Microsoft did a real study where they got people to volunteer who were clinically depressed, and those people agreed to give Microsoft access to all their tweets over time. And so Microsoft came up with an algorithm that was actually developed on depressed people, and they published this report so we know what the outcome was, which was they were 70% accurate at predicting depression. And I interviewed the Microsoft folks, and they were like, you know, this might be useful to help the CDC figure out on a population level, you know, where pockets of depression might be around the United States that we didn't know about, but it should not be used on individuals, right? We're not there yet. 70% is not very accurate when it comes to individuals. And the consequences of a company that is not a medical institution diagnosing people as being depressed or suicidal, you know, without their consent, and the implications of, like, where might that data go? How might that affect you? It's something we've never dealt with before. And so it's really important to ask these questions because obviously we would like the technology to be able to better identify people who need resources. Well, and we'd like it to be able to identify them earlier. But we just don't know if this works right now.
Well, Larry, how about for you? I mean, you were in that place. You were struggling with bipolar disorder in this manic phase. Mentioned Kanye West, who has made several Twitter rants about mental illness and and saying things like, you know, I cannot be on meds and make Watch the Throne level or Dark Fantasy level music. So that fear that treating your illness would also, what, dull your creativity?
Yeah.
Was that the fear?
There is that fear. And I think it's unfounded. Artists really don't know. They feel great when they're manic and make great music, and maybe they attribute the making of the great music to the mania, but they really don't know. There's no data that says, yes, on meds, right, you're not a good musician, and off meds, you're a great musician. So, I mean, there was a wonderful article in The Atlantic about this. But basically, you know, if you're an artist and you think you are struggling with your mental health, I would encourage you to find the right dosage and the right level of treatment instead of trying to get off your meds and self-medicate or self-regulate. You know, talk to your doctor, because sometimes you're on too much of something or on the wrong medication.
Boo, how did it feel for you putting this out there on social media? Were you looking for someone to intervene? Would you have liked it if, you know, a first responder had knocked at your door and said, like, I care, I'm listening, because Facebook found it?
Well, actually, what happened to me is that I used to talk to my mom every morning in Miami, and sometimes I would get up and be manic, and she would detect it on the phone. And so she called the police for me to have me hospitalized when I was in Miami from Georgia. So, you know, I can understand Facebook playing a role, and it is important that people's comments are taken seriously and they get flagged for suicidal tendencies. I just think that it's important, like Natasha was saying, that the data be shared and they be more transparent, because I trust my mom. My mom knows my mental health state. But I don't know if I trust Facebook to do the same thing that my mom was doing, you know?
Well, this is very much what comes up. But however, if there is somebody who is looking for help, what do you recommend?
Well, first of all, you can text 741-741 to the Crisis Emergency Line, and you will get a you'll get a text back, and then they'll connect you with a therapist who will talk you down from whatever state of mind you're in. There's also a lot of resources available online. If you're feeling some sort of way, I would say do some research, go online, use your phone, and find ways to know more about what's going on so you can seek help.
Larry Harris Jr., he's a suicide survivor. Thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Natasha Singer, she's a New York Times technology reporter and reported on Facebook's role on suicide risks. Thank you so much for joining us, Natasha.
Thanks for having me.